All right, Buffalo Bird Podcast. We are in the championship round of these NFL playoffs. And our Buffalo Bills have, you know, of course, defeated the Baltimore Ravens at home in the divisional round to head to the inevitable, the train coming down the tracks, the enemy of destiny, Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Steve Spagnuolo. And Dan, you lived squarely in the middle of Nervous Mafia Town last week. Where are you living these days?
I get more confident as the postseason goes on, JJ, for a couple of reasons. One, the Buffalo Bills have shown an incredible adaptability in each of their games, game planning, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, for their specific matchup. They played a ton of dime, for example, against the Denver Broncos. And then they played a lot more base than we're used to seeing them play to really sell out and stop the run against Baltimore. And while Baltimore had success in the second half of that game and Jackson and Henry kind of found their groove, the Bills have found a formula defensively in this postseason, JJ, where they can take away what their opponent wants to do in enough consistent stretches to let the offense do their job and get the game script in their favor. So it's a formula, JJ, to me that feels like it's working and feels like it is reaching its peak efficacy. As we roll into the matchup, we all kind of felt it was inevitable, a rematch with the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship.
I hear you. And it's funny you mentioned, you know, the Buffalo Bills' recipe for success is to play a conservative game script when they need to, get ahead on the scoreboard, bleed clock, you know, let the other team make mistakes, don't make mistakes, play mistake-free football. Josh Allen has played the most mistake-free football season of any NFL quarterback since the merger in terms of the percentage of his total plays that result in something negative, loss of yards, fumble, interception, etc. And so I think that that's absolutely part of it. And that may be the difference, is Josh Allen's super clean play versus Patrick Mahomes, who's had incredibly clean play, but only since the Bills game forward.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that was the difference in the Ravens game, too. I mean, there's a lot of, like, listen, the whole discourse leading into the Ravens game was so toxic online. The Lamar versus Josh stuff, the MVP talk, and then people really trying to pin that loss on Lamar. Listen, the two turnovers in the first half were costly that Lamar had. But the reality is Lamar played lights out in the second half. Like, he had that team on the precipice of tying the game. And how many times as Bills fans, if you want to remember, have we been in that situation as we have experienced Josh's maturity arc, where there's a there's a bad pitch in maybe the Houston game, there's a couple of picks against Kansas City, but then all of a sudden he turns it on at the right moment? That is just something, and we forget how young Lamar is, given how long he's been in the league. But that's just something that Lamar is going to figure out as he matures. The fact that he had the second half that he had, to me, shows like the incredible skill, the incredible talent that's behind that dude. But it also showcased, JJ, what you said, kind of like Lamar looking at what his future self could be in Josh, and the way that he does not cost his team opportunities anymore to get six or get three, or at the very least, keep the opposing team's offense off the field. If you're a Ravens fan, you want to see the evolution that we have seen with Josh and Lamar. And as a Bills fan, that evolution, JJ, to me, is a reason why I can't believe I'm going to say this, confident heading into the Chiefs game. These are two teams that have played historically clean football,
yeah,
particularly, as you noted, for the Chiefs, playing a lot, just figuring out the turnover thing since their last game against the Bills. But this has been a way of life for Buffalo all season. It's kind of like that Dark Knight Rises quote from Bane, where you've only adopted the darkness, I was born into it. We have been born into this turnover-free brand of football all season. And I still feel like, as a result, there's some opportunities to force KC into some bad habits that they experienced at the beginning of the season, particularly with some of the vulnerabilities they have on the offensive line.
I think you might have the Bane quote a little twisted, because I think KC was born into it. The mistake-free football has been, since Tyreek Hill was traded away, That has been their brand of winning.
I think their brand of winning, all right, and I'm probably going to have to now go back and pull numbers on this, and I feel a bourbon bet coming on. But I think with KC, we've seen this a couple of times, particularly early on in their past two seasons, or I would even say the past three seasons. early on, post Tyreek Hill trade, we've seen Mahomes forcing things because he didn't know who necessarily to trust with the ball. Mahomes hasn't thrown a pick since that week 11 game against Buffalo, but he still has double-digit picks and double-digit turnovers this season. And it was the same thing last season and the same thing the season before. I think where I'm going with my analogy and the Bane quote is that the Chiefs seem to have a gear when they can turn it on, right? And they can rise to every situation that has been thrown at them so far. But what we're seeing from the Buffalo Bills this season as far as care for the football, and on the flip side, reckless abandonment when going after the other team to try to turn it over, that to me is unprecedented. And that's something I don't think, as good as Casey has been at taking care of the ball this year, I don't think they can replicate in this upcoming game, or it'll be harder for them to replicate.
Sure. Yeah, no, okay, I get that. Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right. And that was the difference. And I think that will be the difference for the KC game. That was the difference for the Ravens. It will be the difference for the KC game, is which quarterback is able to maintain and sustain a drive at a critical moment to keep control of the ball and play that super clean football. And then which defense is able to force things, which either force the quarterback to make a decision, force, you know, a runner to cover up the ball because they're punching it out or attempting to. Those are the questions, is which kind of team is going to have more moments, individual moments, because that's what this game's going to come down to, just as the Ravens game did. The Bills won by two. The Ravens missed two-point conversions and had three other chances to score touchdowns ripped away from them by Bills turnover. So it's going to be really about who makes the worst mistake last.
Absolutely.
I think it's going to be I don't know that it's going to be a high-scoring affair. This is going to be like Bills throw Uno reverse and then Chiefs throw Uno reverse.
These are two teams that want to matriculate the ball down the field, basically because of the way they play each other. And listen, Spags has been known for dialing up some really crazy blitz packages. When it has come to Josh, his blitz packages have had more efficacy in certain stretches, but overall less effectiveness throughout the course of the game, because the way Josh is able to maneuver and adapt to the blitz. This could very well be a game, JJ, where both, and Mahomes is just, he feels like he's immune to pressure, right? Unless you can actually get the guy on the ground, like a lot of traditionally great passers, his pocket presence and his mobility in the pocket, his ability to throw off platform, like pressure just doesn't bother these two QBs in a lot of ways. Getting them on the ground, however, is a different story. So this is a game where I could really see potentially Spags just sitting back in zone. And even though that organic four-man rush for Kansas City has been very weak this season, only 31st in overall efficiency when generating pressure from four down linemen, I could absolutely see Spags maybe changing where some of that pressure is coming from, maybe dropping the fourth lineman into coverage, having Chenal shoot the A-gap. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can get some exotic, confusing stuff with just four guys. And I could absolutely see Spags leaning into that because of his history against Josh and Josh's history against the blitz.
Well, I think you bring up a good point, too, which is the four, other than Chris Jones, the four down linemen are not going to, they're not going to eat your lunch if you're a good offensive line. This is one of the best offensive lines. This is the best offensive line in the modern post-drought era the Bills have had in a season. And I think that one of the biggest things is Connor McGovern and Josh Allen's communication has to be on point, especially in a hostile environment, especially when it's loud, to make sure their protections are right. Because I think you're absolutely correct in that Spagnuolo is going to lean on Leo Chenal on delayed blitz or twist stunts with down linemen. And he might rely a little bit on Trent McDuffie coming out of the slot. And both of those individuals have top 10 at their position pass rush win rates when coming from those you know locations. So I think that yes, the down line for the Chiefs is really about control Chris Jones and you will, you know, control the game. I think Spencer Brown or Deion Dawkins can handle Carl Loftus one on one. They should. We've seen them handle better pass rushers. But it's really going to come down to, you know, what the Bills can do in those key moments when that twist or that fire, you know, from the slot comes. If Spagnuolo sends McDuffie and Josh doesn't have an answer with the ball immediately when that shows up in his face, I think that's a little bit of a downfall of the everybody eats, because I think that having as many targets as Josh has, he doesn't necessarily have Shakir, I guess, in some regards, is the no matter what, I have that guy. But as these players develop in the system, hopefully one emerges that's like the third in Beasley, right? Like the third in Cole, where it's that guy is going to be in a good position. He needs his Kelsey.
Absolutely. And we thought his Kelsey was going to be Kincaid, but injuries and the development of people at the position has really kind of delayed that. I think you're absolutely right about McDuffie. And I think we have seen the Ravens run into this issue with Marlon Humphrey and the Broncos run into this issue with Patrick Surtain. You've got an elite cover corner, but you've got offense that is determined to spread the ball out. So what do you do with that elite cover corner? Because chances are good, whoever you put him on, probably not getting the ball in that moment. And that's also probably not the person who can hurt you the most in that moment. I mean, I could honest to God see a world. I mean, they've been playing McDuffie so much on the outside because of his elite coverage abilities. I could absolutely see a world now that they have Watson back where McDuffie is in two positions, glued to Shakir when Shakir is in the slot because he is the closest thing that Josh has a go-to in a release valve or a safety valve when he needs it in clutch moments. And when we're not in those moments, I could see a situation like you described where McDuffie is just rushing the passer as well. It'd be a unique way to use a DB, but at the end of the day, what this Bills offense tries to do is make you waste your best defensive weapon in the secondary. If Spags really wants to get crazy with it and show the Bills something they haven't seen before, glue him to Shakir and then send him on the pass rush when when you don't think Shakir's a threat or when Shakir's off the field.
Yeah, I think that's that'd be an interesting twist and smart planning on Spagnuolo's part. The good news is that if we've thought of it, likely Joe Brady has also thought of it.
I would think so.
Yeah.
No, nothing is novel on this pod that we have
Yes,
thought about.
exactly. So, but I think I want to like talk just for a moment about the Bills offense and the way they're going to design this game plan. I believe is I think they're going to try. I think if they score on their first couple of drives, it's going to be a play selection of like 30 runs to like seven passes. And it's going to be long plodding drives. I think that's if they can hit those, that's going to be the answer. If they can hit those and get a Kansas City punt in between them, look out world, we're coming, right? Like that's the recipe to get through this round. Because the Chiefs, their run, I think you mentioned this before, their run efficiency early in the season was top 10. But it has absolutely tailed off in the latter half of the season.
Dropped off a cliff. Yeah.
And so, I mean, they were like fourth best when the Bills met them in week 11, and they did poorly enough in the final remaining 8 weeks of the season or 7 weeks of the season to fall all the way to 11th, which you have to, if you're a person who's ever had a GPA or anything like that, you have to really tank it to drop out of fourth.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. And I think you're correct, and I think that's the way the Bills want to win, but that's also the way that teams have forced the Bills to win over the past couple of seasons. They're like, we will invite you to run the ball. We are not going to let Josh and your wide receivers beat us over the top. Now the Buffalo Bills have an offense that is very suited to how defenses want to play them. And as a result of that, I too am expecting limited possessions in this game, unless there's, like we talked about, a key turnover here or there that the Bills or the Chiefs can generate against the opposing unit. But I mean, listen, at the end of the day, I've been saying this all season, and we talked about like what does a Bills victory look like against the Ravens? I said James Cook needed to have 20 touches, Ty Johnson probably has a touchdown, right? And all this other stuff. The reality is, JJ, as much as I would love to see James Cook touch the ball 22, 25 times a game, with the way this run game is built and with this matriculation efficiency type of style built into this offensive scheme, the Buffalo Bills have an elite offensive line, and I would argue one of the best running back rooms in the league with what they can throw at teams. I think James Cook will obviously be a feature, but I think a part of the game plan here too is going to be feature all of those running backs and really wear down this KC team as the game goes on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I need to throw some flowers at Ty Johnson's feet. He runs like a player who didn't get into the league as a low round draft pick and bounce around on people's practice squads and get cut and be on waivers. I just like he just seems like such a talent every time he touches the ball, and he's the kind of player, the fact that he's the best pass blocking back they have and is in on all of those third downs means that you're seeing him show up in all of these incredibly clutch moments, fourth downs as well, like the pass to the back of the end zone against the Broncos, right?
Oh my
Like
God.
just wild plays that he's in the center of. And it's clear that Josh Allen trusts him when it comes to throwing him the ball. And he also, you know, I mean, he iced the game with a first down run for 13 yards, which I thought, I think it was exactly 13 yards.
All right, JJ, let's flip it over to the offensive side, the defensive side of the ball for the Bills. First and foremost, what are you making of Xavier Worthy and his quote unquote personal vendetta against the Bills for passing on him in the draft in favor of Keon Coleman? Is there any fire to that smoke?
Can you even have that? Like,
Is that a thing?
I get that if you're a, you know, if you're a unanimous top five QB and a team trades out to pick somebody else or pick that you thought was going to pick you, or they pick a different quarterback over you, and you wait until the end of the round because you're the last QB. Like, that's where I think that there's like a reasonable way to have a little bit of sauce on your, you know, on your hate taco. Worthy has none. Like he literally he the Bills, it's almost like he probably wasn't the top wide receiver on the board for every team. So that's why I think it's different. If this was Brian Thomas Jr. and the Bills were in prime position to pick him, a unanimous top four wide receiver in the draft,
Or Malik Nabers.
or Malik Nabers, and they traded away from the opportunity to do so, sauce that hate taco all you want. This one though, I don't know. It's weak sauce.
Dude, you were at the end of the first round. There were four other viable options that were on everybody's big board at that point. You had Xavier Leggett still available, A.D. Mitchell still available, Keon Coleman and Worthy, all still available at that point. Like, it was not like, to your point, Worthy was a clear cut. Oh, the Bills got to have him in that particular spot. The Chiefs coveted him a lot. And I think the Chiefs made the Bills an offer that was very attractive for them in order to trade up and get him. But no one outside of the Chiefs was coveting Worthy in that way. They saw his value, just not his value at that particular spot. It's wild. Dude, it's wild. But like, this is what teams do. Andy Reid, at the beginning of this whole press tour leading up to this game, said, yeah, we're probably going to be the underdogs in this game, and that's fine. Like, it's us against everybody. And this is just the shit that teams, players, and coaches say to get themselves motivated. There is no greater motivator than no one believes in us. The Chiefs, by the way, opened this thing as a 1.5 point favorite, and that has gone up to 2 points in a lot of sports books since betting has opened on this game. The Chiefs are not underdogs in this game. It is wild to me that they continue to convince themselves that they are year in and year out when they are the reigning potential three-time Super Bowl champions. It's just crazy to me. But this is the shit teams and players do. I'm not reading anything into it, but I would also love to see Rasul Douglas and press man on Xavier Worthy every time he's lined up against him and just put him in the ground.
Yeah, I'd like to see Rasul Douglas play Xavier Worthy like L'Jarius Sneed played Tyreek Hill against the Dolphins last offseason.
Yeah, just put him right on the ground every single time.
See if his release package is up to snuff as a rook.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely.
yeah, I think that the inju there are interesting components of this Bills defense versus the Chiefs offense. A few of them. So just like one quick note about the Bills offense. Keon Coleman will have an opportunity to try to match or better Xavier Worthy's stats in this game. Unless stats don't matter, the win matters, right? But Keon Coleman, I think, probably has a chip on his shoulder too. The Bills put a lot of trust in him by trading out to get down there to get him. He seemed to be their target from the start of the trades, and they made two of them. And so I do think that that this is an opportunity for him to step up. And then too, when we were talking before about Josh Allen having the guy. Dalton Kincaid is playing in this game and didn't play in the game prior, so that'll be an interesting component. But on the flip side of the ball, the Bills will have Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard, neither of whom they had last season in this game. Was Christian Benford also out in that matchup against the Chiefs in the playoffs, or was he in and Rasul Douglas was just playing on like a busted knee?
He was in. They both Douglas and Benford were playing in that game, if memory serves, and Douglas was really banged up. He was not 100%, not even close to it.
Okay. Well, Bills Mafia, it's the moment you've all been waiting for. With the injury to Taylor Rapp holding him out for this game, we're recording on Saturday, the day before the game. Micah Hyde will be putting on a headset and jacket and sitting on the sidelines coaching Cole Bishop for the start.
Yes,
So, yeah.
absolutely. Dude, Cole's gonna have some opportunities. They're gonna go
Yeah.
after Cole, right? Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and Matt Nagy, their offensive coordinator, they know how to target what they perceive as the opposing team's weak spot. And I think back to that Nico Collins miscommunication in week five, where Collins just got behind everybody and it was Bishop's assignment to stay in front of him, and took it to the house, right? If I am Sean McDermott and Bobby Babich, I am like queuing up that game film from Houston, being like, dude, this is what you can't let happen. Because they're going to try to get Hollywood Brown behind him. They're going to try to get Xavier Worthy behind him. And if you're Cole Bishop, you've got to let your speed and athleticism take over at that point, right? And that's Taylor Rapp has been a really solid safety for us. This is a moment, though, where I could see Cole Bishop's playmaking ability really factor in, which is a lot of pressure to put on a rookie playing against Patrick Mahomes. But I believe this coaching staff can get him ready. And listen, dude, this coaching staff has never had an athletic specimen like Bishop to work with against Patrick Mahomes. I could actually see him used in some really, really, really important ways.
And I think that's one of the things too that, you know, if you're one of the benefits to having two incredibly athletic, kind of undersized is the description used often, linebackers in Milano and Bernard, is that you can do some switch stuff with safeties. You don't have to send Milano to sugar the A gap and threaten that blitz. You can have Cole Bishop creeper up towards the line and go on a blitz and have one of them drop to the deep third. And it's different opportunities to use them because I agree. I think that we haven't even seen the tip of the iceberg of the ways that they could employ his usage. I think the issue with his development this season is that Sean McDermott has said in press availability in years past, usually in the offseason when he's like a little bit more open and candid, that his defense is pretty complicated and it takes safety specifically 2 to 3 years to be comfortable with it. It's why we saw Dean Marlowe come back so many times early in Sean McDermott's coaching tenure. It was because he was like one of the only guys in the literal world who understood how to teach his peers that defense. He was, you know, mostly a liability in coverage, but it was really just about like he knew it top to bottom and was a good player coach in that room. And that I think is why the Bills, you know, signed Micah Hyde back, and that's because they have Taylor Rapp who's year two in the system. They have DeMar Hamlin who's year three or four. In the system and four because DeMar Hamlin's I think is unrestricted free agent after this year.
Yep.
And so they have a couple of people with some experience, but it's really about making sure that Cole Bishop is ready for that moment. And I agree with you. I think that I worry a lot about this game because Patrick Mahomes has been in the latter half of the season trying to push the ball down the field a lot more. And it's to Worthy, it's to Hollywood Brown in the last couple games, and then it's to DeAndre Hopkins. Juju Smith-Schuster is there. I think he got like one target in the last game of 20 yards or more. He hasn't been effective of it, but I don't want this to be the game where all of a sudden he is.
Where the clicks, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I have significant concerns about when Cole Bishop is in coverage, shaded to the side of the field that Rasul Douglas is the primary corner. Because that's when he's been beat. They've been beat on those seam balls like 3 times this season.
Yeah. That's gonna be interesting to watch that alignment when it does come up. And you know that Reed and Mahomes are very well aware of that as well. So I could absolutely see that communication and the importance of the communication between your cornerback and your safety playing a huge role there. That's where some of that rookie jitters or the downside of playing a rookie could absolutely come into effect. JJ, let's close it out here before predictions with a talk about the Bills pass rush, because there have been notable issues with this Kansas City offensive line. They've moved Thuney in a lot of times over it to left tackle. They have inserted Kaliendo at guard. They have seen an improvement in their pass protection, getting Juwan Taylor out of that key left tackle spot, but their run game efficacy and their run game efficiency has taken a hit with Kaliendo in because he's not the greater that Thuney is. So, JJ, what do you think the offensive line alignment for the Chiefs is going to look like? And then where do you see some of the advantages for this Bills pass rush to get after Mahomes?
So I think that I think they're going to keep Tooney at left tackle. I don't think, excuse me. I think they, Humphreys, I think is on, is a possibility, but
I have no idea what they have in that guy. He played one game and then got hurt. Right.
Yeah. So, but he, I think he's healthy again. So there's a chance you see him show up at, you know, at tackle. But I do think if he's unavailable or they just don't trust him in such a critical key moment, they're going to have Humphrey at left tackle. It's, you know, one of the top five, top three guards in the entire league. And so they're going to have an opportunity to, like, lean on the guy they need, because they desperately need protection from the exterior pass rush, the outside DEs from the Bills, more than they do from the interior pass rush. Sadly, you know, DaQuan Jones is not having the all-pro level season he was having last season before he was hurt. And Ed Oliver has shown flashes, but only when he's in one-on-one matchups. He's not been, you know, splitting double teams as much. I will say, though, he hasn't been making huge splashes on the stat sheet, but he has had an excellent postseason, Ed Oliver has to this point. It's the kind of messy, gritty stuff that doesn't show up that on the film, or it doesn't show, it shows up on the film, it doesn't show up on the broadcast, but it's absolutely critical to keeping Matt Milano and Terrell Bernard clean for a lot of their play. And so for that, I think that there's a chance that you know, we see Ed Oliver have a nice game here, specifically if he has a matchup against their backup guard, whose name, Caliendo. Yeah. DJ Humphreys, I don't know, he might go in at tackle. And if he does, I think that's a wonderful opportunity for either Greg Rousseau or Von Miller. Why am I blanking? I'm just
because Von has had very little impact for the Bills since he was signed.
He's
that's
so forgettable.
And he's probably no longer with the team after the season.
Well, so. And this is the kind of moment where, like, Von is, he cares a lot about positivity and, like, the universe and legacy and all this stuff. Von, if you want your legacy to be established as a good pickup for the Buffalo Bills, make two critical plays in this game and a Super Bowl. Just two. It doesn't even have to be a full-on sack. Just force the issue. Just push a runner outside in, like, you know, an obvious situation where they had a crease over your side of the run fit, and just, you know, force a negative play that way. Like, just two good plays in this game and a future game for the Bills to secure victories. And I don't think that even if he leaves this offseason, people are going to probably say, like, yeah, we overpaid. But they're not going to, like, he's going to be welcome back. He's going to get free wings if he ever, you know, deigns to come near Buffalo again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. I would love to see more from this defensive line in the four down pass rush. I really would. There were moments in that Ravens game where we were rushing four, particularly in the second half, because we just dropped everybody into zone because we were so afraid of Lamar, like, you know, getting the 20-point touchdown and what have you. But it was solid scheming defensively. That's the way you got to play at the end of a game. Keep everything in front of you. But, man, that four-man pass rush against the Baltimore offensive line, I mean, it just got nothing. It got nothing. And that was the moment in that game where it's like, oh yeah, our guys are really small on the defensive line, right? They really are undersized. So that being said, you put a guy like Humphrey in, you put a guy like Dooney in, that's where the speed and the athleticism of some of these edge rushers could really potentially wreak havoc in Epineza, Miller, and Rousseau. And that's what I'm going to be watching on the defensive side of the ball for sure. And I want to see, like, I want to see how Cole does. I want to see where Rasul Douglas is positioned, right? Him and Benford can be two really physical cornerbacks. And we saw in week 11 where the Bills played a lot more man against the Chiefs and they played a lot more press than they're used to seeing. I would dust that off again. And I know Hollywood Brown is a bigger factor in the equation this time around, but I would see if there is any continuation of success against these guys, because Worthy, he is not a press beater, and neither is Brown been throughout the course of his career, right? And Hopkins, as good as he is, he's not an elite separator and hasn't been for a few years. I think you can take your chances at man if you really want to. Play some of that magnet zone to shut down Kelsey like we saw, and see if the Kansas City Chiefs, between week 11 and now, have come up with an answer for it.
Well, and it really is, you know, that week 11, we described it in depth on the pod, but it was really three down linemen, replace the fourth lineman with an extra DB, have your two linebackers still on the field. You know, so it's a dime coverage with six defensive backs, two linebackers, and three down linemen. It's the kind of thing where, like, when I was watching that Ravens game, I was like, why are we even, because what they did was the traditional dime where they dropped, they took a linebacker off the field and replaced them with a DB. And so it was four down linemen, linebacker, and then six DBs. Like, why are we doing that?
Just got because shredded.
It's just not worth it. And then the Bills have also played a different dime where they keep linebackers in and take, you know, they take the down linemen off. In those situations when a three-man organic pressure with this defensive line, you might as well take all of the defensive linemen off the field.
Just because play if DBs it's a pass, and linebackers.
Well, if it's a passing situation, the offensive line can't advance down the field anyway until the ball, you know, is in the hands of somebody. So, yeah, you might get into trouble with a screen. But otherwise, like, just freaking a third and 25, take all of your defensive linemen off the field. It's probably because they just don't have enough capable, you know, DBs on the game day roster. But fill it with linebackers and DBs. I don't care. Like, because that's how much effectiveness the Bills pass rush has had when they're overmatched five to four or five to three.
Love it. Oh, my God. I love it. All right, JJ. Are you ready for some predictions sure to go wrong on this one?
I mean, we didn't talk about the third most important phase of the game, and that is not special teams, but it's refereeing.
We'll get to that with my prediction sure to go wrong.
All right.
I've got one for you. All right, JJ. So as I mentioned, this line opened at 1.5, leaked up to 2 in favor of the Kansas City Chiefs, has come back down to 1.5 in a lot of sports books. But according to DraftKings, it is in fact -1.5 in favor of the Chiefs in Kansas City. Over under on this game is 48.5. JJ, final score prediction.
So I am so hopeful. I'm so hopeful about this. I'm so confident in this team. They're different than we've seen them. This time it could be different, I think, is that's one of our pod, you know, subtitles for a previous.
I'm ready to be heard again.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it's like, this is the Bills were the only team during the regular season in meaningful games to best this Chiefs recipe of mistake-free football, causing other team to make mistakes, and letting the refs push them over the goal line. This game, I think, is a chance for the Bills to, again, put it out of the hands of the refs, to put it in a situation where the you know, helpful calls, which are real, data points to they are absolutely real, especially in the postseason, are not going to land at the feet of the Chiefs. I'm saying Bills 31. Because, again, the Bills are good at scoring over 31 points, over 30 points or more. And the Chiefs have absolutely not. I think they had one game where they got to 30. Bills 31, Chiefs 24. Go Bills.
The Bills were the only team to score 30 this season against this Chiefs defense when they had their starters in. I mean, the Broncos game at the end of the season is not a comparison point. That being said, if what holds true in our analysis is that these are two teams that are going to want to matriculate it and try to play mistake-free football, I see a lot of long drives, particularly hopefully for the Buffalo Bills offense, and I see just a limited amount of opportunities. I mean, it really could be a situation where each team is getting 3 possessions, right? 3 series and a half, unless, again, turnovers factor in heavily here. So I'm going to say Bills 24, Chiefs 20. I just think limited opportunities, the familiarity with both of these coaching staffs have with what the other wants to do. It lends itself to a very tense game. I think a very well played game, but ultimately a pretty low scoring game. So I've got the Bills obviously winning, but I also have the under on the point total.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
What props you got?
All right. Well, so let's get to the referees.
Okay.
JJ, over under 1.5 sacks by the Buffalo Bills, overturned by a late roughing the passer call from these officials. So you alluded to it. If you follow any of our socials, we have been spamming this narrative all week, attempting to gaslight the NFL officiating crew for this week into keeping their laundry in their pockets. But mm-hmm. The Kansas City Chiefs, JJ, in 11 playoff appearances, have benefited from the penalty disparity 10 times. They have had less penalties than in 11 ga- they have had less penalties 10 times in 11 games than their opponent. They have also benefited from seven roughing the passer calls in those 11 games, whereas their opponent has benefited from one. Wild to think about in the era of quote unquote protecting the QBs, but the Kansas City Chiefs somehow always seem to draw a favorable roughing the passer call and also seem to defer responsibility when they indeed get a late hit or rough the passer. So, JJ, that's my prop. 1.5 Buffalo Bills sacks overturned
Yeah.
by a roughing the passer call.
So I'm just like, again, I'm being hopeful. I'm gonna hit under. I think maybe one, because they're probably gonna get their due. It's whenever people are like, oh, the narrative about the Chiefs get all the calls is like so bogus. It like sure, maybe it just happens to be a coincidence that all of the data points to like them getting, in 20 roughing the passers overturning sacks, the opponent gets 18 and they get two. But that looks like a reasonable difference to me. That looks reportable in terms of, statistical probability. And so, yeah, I'm gonna say under. I think it's maybe one happens, but hopefully, I mean, if two happens, then, the fix is in.
Yeah, I'm gonna say over, and there's a couple of reasons, and none of them are related to conspiracy theories. One, the Chiefs play a lot of playoff home games, and the reality is that the home team just tends to statistically get the benefit of the call. It just is what it is. It happens in every sport. It happens in baseball, basketball, and football. Two, Patrick Mahomes, who is like, not just because he beats the Bills, I just find him less and less likable every season. He plays this really snaky kind of like quarterback run game in which he waits till the absolute last moment, ducking behind an offensive lineman or a wide receiver until he finally decides to hit the ground. And at that point, as a defensive player, you're already in the tackling motion, right? But he absolutely stretches the limits of when a QB can go down and still draw that call. It's sleazy to me. I don't like it. It has shades of Kenny Pickett's college football at Pitt, fake slide to bait some defensive lineman to hold up. I just hate it. I hate the way he approaches it, but it works. And until officials get on that train and understand that Mahomes is baiting this from a lot of teams and there's nothing the defensive player can do, I think ultimately it happens. I could absolutely see it happening in this game. So I'm going to say over. I'm going to say two sacks get overturned because of roughing the passer.
All right, I mean, let's speak about those sacks. If you have two sacks being overturned, my prop is the Bills defense sacks Mahomes 1.5 times or more over under. Do they stand?
I'm gonna take the under. The Bills
Okay.
just in the postseason have had zero ability to sack Patrick Mahomes. They do it great in the regular season, but in the postseason, dude is like unsackable for our squad for some reason. That being said, I could see Taron Johnson recording a sack. I could see Johnson shooting the gap like they like to use him a lot of
Yeah.
times. I could see Milano even maybe getting one. But outside of that, I'm so out on this edge group other than Rousseau. I have a hard time seeing someone in that traditional four defensive line set getting a sack. I would love to be wrong, but this is the one thing that has proven true over the course of the season. The sack production's just been down for the defensive line.
Well, and I think too with Rousseau specifically, I like him as a player too. I think it's a good thing that the Bills have him. I'm interested in re-signing him. He is not your premier pass rusher. He's not your TJ Watt. He's not your, he's not the guy. He's not your Max Crosby, the two players I want to trade for. He's there to be an every down, incredibly reliable run defender with an amazing length who tips balls at the line and then who occasionally has a burst where it's like, oh my gosh, like he just rocked that guy back on his heels and looped around for the sack or the sack strip fumble. Yeah, he's the Herbig to somebody else's TJ Watt on this line, and the Bills still don't have that guy. So I'm with you. I'm gonna hit the under on the sacks. I wanna take the over, but if they get two, I'm standing by my narrative that at least one of them is overturned. So
Absolutely. All right, JJ, I got one more for you. Cole Bishop, over under half an interception. They're going to test him. He's going to have the opportunity to make a play.
well, Under. I'll say under because I just, if this was a different team and not Mahomes, I think that that, like, I feel like if Cole Bishop was playing this entire game, he played, you know, at least a half against the Ravens. But if Cole Bishop was playing this entire game and was able to prepare all week like a starter, I could see him getting a interception against the Ravens or the Broncos or somebody else. I don't see him getting an interception in this one against Mahomes. I just think that they're too careful. I think they are going to throw balls into his direction, but I just don't trust that his development as a rookie player is far enough along that he's, like, it just seems he might drop an interception as far as I'm concerned, because, like, it's the kind of thing where, like, I feel like having seen him play, he still looks like he's playing a little bit hesitant. He still looks like he's playing in his head, trying to remember his assignments. And that's not players that usually get interceptions.
I'm going to say over.
All
because
right,
my heart is in this, and Cole Bishop has been my guy from the draft up until this moment. And there are two things I would love to see happen in this game. Keon Coleman catch a touchdown. Cole Bishop get an interception. Bills win the Super Bowl. Or Bills go to the Super Bowl. That's what I want to see, man. That's what I want to see.
You brought up something interesting, though. Does the NFL just give the Bills the Lombardi Trophy and cancel the Super Bowl if they win this game?
No, we absolutely not.
The whole thing.
That Washington offense, and I have been hesitant to give Cliff Kingsbury his flowers, but, you know, now I'm starting to think that maybe having Kyler Murray, a QB who literally can't see over the line of scrimmage in Arizona to throw a deep ball, maybe had something to do
was
with that.
Was that the problem?
That maybe that was the problem. Maybe it wasn't Cliff after all. But I think Washington's, I don't want to get too far ahead of it. Washington's got a real offense with real burners that are going to be a real problem for either the Chiefs or the Bills, whoever wins. And then, dude, I know Josh has like shredded Vic Fangio defenses before, but that Philadelphia defense, they got speed, they got athleticism, they're brutal against the run. Jalen yep. Carter is a man amongst boys. Anybody who is saying the winner of this AFC championship is going to be a cakewalk in the Super Bowl, they are not watching enough football. Those are two really good teams on the other side in the NFC.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that it's interesting to see where we would be at the end of this weekend. If the Bills should advance, gosh, I don't know who I fear more, actually. I think I prefer Washington because of Sean McDermott's ability against a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, and that defense is punching way above its weight class, for sure. A lot of veteran guys that are stabilizing it. I will say another prediction sure to go wrong. If the Bills win and their opponent is Philly, I would say the spread on that is probably 1.5 in favor of the Bills. And then if the Commanders win and the Bills win, I would say the Bills are probably like a 4.5, 5.5 point favorite, maybe.
Reason I don't want Philly to win if the Bills win, or Philly to win then the Bills win, is the Philadelphia Eagles are the only NFC East team that hasn't beaten the Bills in the Super Bowl. And that feels like just testing fate to be like, oh.
Let's go for the sweep, guys.
Let's go for the clean sweep, NFC East. Yeah, like I would be really anxious about that.
I really would.
Plus, their run game is shown to be something that the Bills would really struggle to stop.
Right. We're talking dangerous, man. We're talking dangerous. We're getting way ahead of ourselves. We got to stop it right here. All right, y'all. Thanks for joining us today on this wonderful Saturday prior to the game day. Get our game day, as always. Like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your pods. Google, Apple, Spotify, YouTube. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.